Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Welcome to the Hardwood Handicappers Podcast.
They're a bunch of guys who ain't never played the game, and they never got the girls in high school, and they just want to get in the game.
With your host, Jonathan Von Tobel.
See, the thing is, you guys look at me, you see the backwards hat, the gray socks, the funky outfit, and you say, now this guy's a chump, am I right?
No, f***ing geek. I'm a f***ing geek.
Only on the VSiN Podcast Network.
All right, cool. Happy to welcome in this edition to Hardwood Handicappers, Tom Byrne, all over SiriusXM, Mad Dog Sports Radio, a fantastic NBA handicapper as well. A few Hardwood NBA handicappers and good ones at that to find. So, Tom, one of the very few. Before we get to NBA stuff, though, I got to get your thoughts on something. So, I'm something of a social media maven. I'm pretty popular, and had a tweet yesterday that I feel like would start a good conversation. So, my kid is 3. My first kid. My other son just turned 5 months or something like that. So now we're entering into new territory with the older son. He started preschool about a couple of months ago, you know, hanging out with other kids. He got his first invite to a birthday party today or yesterday. Where do you stand on this? Because I got to tell you, out of all of the things that I did not look forward to as a parent, it was interacting with other parents and their children at events like this.
Yeah, you're not wrong. Unfortunately, you do got to get used to it. And you're going to be throwing the party soon. So find that local bowling alley or whatever you have to do. Hopefully there's some TV set up. My gosh. It's not easy. You know, you can lean on the wife a little bit, though. Like, my son had a party at a roller rink. She said, you want to go, right? I said, you know, it won't kill me to stay. So she just took the son and I watched the other kids. So you got two now.
Yeah.
So why don't you stay home with the 5-month-old? You know, hon, go ahead and take. I'll sacrifice. I'll stay here with the 5-month-old. Though, I don't know. The 5-month, you know, pooping and needing to be fed and naps and everything else, that might be harder. So it depends.
Well, she's, you know, I don't have the biggest house, so she might be able to hear me now. My weapon was going to be, oh, babe, like the NBA games. You know, I got to watch these. I'm sorry. I can't really go, you know?
Yeah. That doesn't fly that well, though. Once, at least I have 4 now, though. Yeah. 1 or 2 that worked. 3, 4, like, that's out the door now.
Right.
So I'm walking around. I'm constantly on my phone checking scores, and then she's mad at you for checking scores. I'm telling you, we made our bet a long time ago with the kids.
Yeah. So, well, we'll see. It's I think the fortunate part is it's at a spot where we usually go to. It's like this play place up the street, so it's a pretty cool spot. But the other thing of this, and this is the guilt that was eating at me, because my wife and I were talking about this, which was, you know, like for us, if we were to like throw a party, like we've had a party for before, obviously in the past, but our families are so big and we have our own friends that like we have enough within our inner circle that we would not think to drop invitations off at his preschool. And I don't want to like, what if this girl, this little girl has a traumatic experience and nobody shows up to her birthday party? Like, right. I don't want to be one of the ones that contribute to that. You know what I mean?
Oh, 100%. Nothing gets me more upset that when you invite people and then they don't show, where you find out that your son was at a party. He was like one of the only couple people there. Yeah. Oh, God. You want to walk up and just slap somebody's parents and then wait till you become one of these sports parents. Okay. Oh. And eventually you're going to find out nobody volunteers. So half the time I end up coaching. And then you got to deal with the parents in your ear. Oh my God. It's not going to get easier.
So my first year out of high school, I actually helped volunteer. There was an NYS, that's the Nevada Youth Sports, a football team out here. It was an 8-man football team. And like, apparently they had put up an ad on Craigslist. Like it was a franchise that was mired in mediocrity. They had put this team together for a while, but they had won like one game over the last two seasons. It was via forfeit. Like it was a nightmare. Nobody wanted to help out. And so, you know, me and my brother-in-law did it. We actually did a good job. We won the championship that year. It was a lot of fun. Just, you know, like they're kids. All you got to do is focus and pay attention and like they'll catch on. But you're right. Like, it's incredible hearing like just parents in your ear talking like it's a real thing. Like these kids are getting paid for it. I think.
Oh, yeah. They better get the ball. They better get playing time. Oh, my gosh. It's
One of the worst things we did was a kid that his father fancied him a superstar. And you could clearly tell like the kid was playing football because the dad wanted him to, as opposed to the son wanting to. So we were practicing tackling drills, and you know, we put him up there, and this kid just gets speared, like just destroyed, absolutely wrecked. And, like, we didn't do it on purpose, you know what I mean? But like, we never saw the kid again after that.
Yeah, man, it's no joke. Seriously. You know, it's a shame though. You feel bad for the kids.
Yes.
I just worry about the kids and the parents. Most of them are great, by the way. I don't want to make it seem like 50% of the parents are terrible, but you always get a couple knuckleheads sprinkled in, believe that.
Yep. All right. So with that, we move on. Speaking of knuckleheads, Draymond Green, I don't know how to make the segue. So let's talk about that, because we saw that yesterday. The Golden State Warriors falling in game two to the Memphis Grizzlies, 106-101. So this has been, I think it's been a fun series. It's been an interesting one. You know, I tweeted this out yesterday. When you have Steph and Klay playing the way that they are, and I think, too, I want to get your thoughts on this. So Klay was kind of – he wasn't getting dragged yesterday, but Klay did not have a good game yesterday. Klay Thompson. No. Poor shot selection, very inaccurate. I was also less than impressed with Steph Curry in that game. I thought there were multiple times defensively. There was a key three-point shot that he gave up where he didn't communicate with Draymond Green, that he was switching off and going to going to John Morant. Draymond actually kind of laid into him, like, what are you doing? Multiple possessions where he's kind of leaving his dude on defense to go do something else. Poor shot selection for him, too. But I think it's a positive that you look at that and you go, Steph Curry, Klay Thompson had two really poor games, and yet we got home court back. We have a 1-1 split heading back home. What have you made of Golden State through these first two games?
Yeah, it's fair. In other words, they haven't played their ceiling, and here they are in a good spot nonetheless. And you got to wonder now if Dylan Brooks is going to be out game three. I don't know what Dylan Brooks was doing. I don't usually even play player props, but it's pretty funny. JVT, I decided to get involved. You know what? I'm going to go over Dylan Brooks.
Oh, boy.
2 minutes in, he's out the game. You know what? Let me stick with the sides. Now, look, I'm with you. Bottom line is, I thought Memphis competed. Obviously, they covered both games. They needed a little fortune game one. I was close to taking on both games. Of course, I didn't. But bottom line is, now they go back to Golden State. You got to feel comfortable with the Warriors. I didn't buy what the odds makers were trying to sell us coming into the game, that the most likely result would be sweep. That felt like
it was weird.
But at the same time, to your point, man, we haven't even got Golden State bringing their A game yet. You know, it's funny how the pendulum has swung a little bit. Coming in, I think a lot of us were on Phoenix. Now Devin Booker's injury, maybe they weren't as dominant as some people would like. It seems like people are kind of leaving Golden State, and I get it, but they've got to defend. And you made a point about Steph Curry defensively. He's always been a liability. You know this, the smart coaches are going to hunt him in switches. Now, sometimes teams get a little too carried away with that, right? And they start hunting so thoroughly that it ends up hurting them a little bit. They force it. But Steph's always going to be a problem on that end. He makes up for it for the most part on the other end. Klay Thompson, I think, is an interesting situation. Boy, he got lucky, and he missed those two free throws the game prior, although he did hit the big three, 36 seconds left. He hasn't been the same guy. Like, you know, you're not going to get that game six against Kevin Durant and the Oklahoma City Thunder type of performance from Klay anymore. The question is, can he still play at a – I'd ask you, and some Golden State fans won't even like asking, just, oh, he's clearly top 25. Is Klay Thompson considered to be a top 50 player right now, I think is interesting.
Yeah, right now I would say no. When he was at his peak, I think it's very clear that he was a top 25 guy. But like, yeah, right now, and even too, like, there's multiple times where like there was a possession late in that game where defensively, obviously, he's not the same guy, right? Where John Morant gets into the top of the key and he kind of hits him with a jab step real quick, and he got him going back, and you know what I mean? And like, Ja's not going to hit step back threes a lot, but he did drain one, and he was getting him going back. And to your point too about Steph, and Jordan Poole is in this mix as well, like the efforts there at times. But the game plan for Memphis down the stretch in crunch time was John Morant, top of the key, get Steph Curry on him and let him go to work. And they won the game because of it.
Yeah, no question. Now, I will say this, though. Sometimes Ja gets a little too happy to shoot the ball down the stretch. Even the prior game, now I'm nitpicking, but he made two fantastic plays. Next time down, I said aloud, because we had some people over for a party, birthday party.
Okay.
I said, he's going to force this. He did. Next time down, forced it. The next possession is when Finch called timeout, got on the ball on the run, went to that left-handed hook layup, whatever you want to call it. It actually worked in game five against Minnesota. Didn't work that time down. But you saw the good, the bad, and the ugly from Ja. He can force it sometimes, but am I going to kill Finch for going Ja Morant versus Steph Curry? No, you have to. And so I'd imagine they're going to do a little bit more of that as we move forward. So, look, it's going to be a good series, but I think we're both probably in the same wavelength here. I think Golden State gets both and probably sends it back to Memphis 3-1. Now, as far as the numbers concerned, right now, I'm not seeing much value. I saw a little on Memphis games 1 and 2. I didn't play it stupidly. In this one, maybe lean slightly Memphis, but not even close to what it was before. So I probably stay away from the number.
Yeah, Warriors 6.5-point favorite right now. Total 226.5. And this actually kind of leads me into something we were texting about earlier, which is home court and how this has been factoring into the postseason up to this point. So it's pretty clear right now that odds makers are using 3 points. I mean, you look at a number like this, you know, Warriors close about a 1.5-point favorite. They don't cover, obviously, in game two. You make a slight adjustment, then you get the 6-point swing back home. It puts you at Golden State minus 6.5. Now, the way that I have been factoring in home court, for those who don't know, is essentially just taking the median result result of all of the games. So in the regular season, it's every single game. I got a spreadsheet on Excel. I just type it into a column and, you know, I get another cell that has the median number for me that gives me home court. So far in the postseason, it's been solidly one, just a flat one. And if you look at, and I crunched the numbers the other day on the show on VSiN, going into yesterday's games, home teams, while they were up 26-21 straight up, they were 21-26 against the spread and also failing to cover by about 1.7 points per game. That puts you right around that, hey, that 3-point mark that we're talking about. So it seems at this point, Tom, that home court is not as strong as it once was. It's a small sample size in the postseason. So we'll see if, as these games go along, it gets a little bit stronger. But I always thought that home court was a little bit stronger in the postseason. That hasn't been the case.
Historically, it certainly is. Yeah, it's interesting because I was using the Clean in the Glass net rating. And if you go by pace, now I go by per game because not every game is the same in terms of the pace. But generally, it's at 3. In fact, if you break it down, they have it at 3-2 per 100 possessions. So per pace, which is, I don't have it right here. I think it's like 95.5 possessions per game in the playoffs. It would put it at about 3.05 if my math is right. So, you know, I reached out to you because I heard you on Visa and you said you had it at 1. I figured you did it that way. I was wondering if there are other, you know, numbers I'm missing. Would it be the first time? So it is interesting. Your number has actually been more profitable. Now, if you go by the net rating on Clean in the Glass, we both like it because it scrapes away the garbage time. They had the regular season at 1.87, I believe, which is right. And yours was probably around 1.55, somewhere in that range. I think they'll probably come pretty close. But right now, your number is probably a little bit more accurate. I've been handicapping with the 3 like Vegas. So you're probably finding more value than I am. I haven't been on a game the last 2 nights. I do have a couple coming up. I like Philly tonight. I like Boston tomorrow or Saturday, excuse me. But yeah, right now it looks like your number is the better one to use. The happy median might be the nice place to go here.
Yeah. And so right now, I think after yesterday, I've got road teams is 26-23 against the spread. So it's starting to even out a little bit. Yeah. So we will see if that ultimately holds up. So we go from there, and you kind of alluded to it too. This, I get it's the NBA postseason, but it always hits me when we get here. We're not going to see these two teams again until Saturday. That's whack.
So ridiculous. God, it makes no sense to be off that long. It's Wednesday.
Yeah.
They're going to have Wednesday, Thursday, Friday off. It's stupid. And if you look historically, you know, it's not hard to find these sort of things. An NBA stuffer has it. Historical data, the best time to have off, 2 days.
Yeah.
Worth 1.4 points, okay? If you have more than that, it's down to 0.2 because now rust, in theory, enters the equation. I don't know why they can't work it out. Maybe the arena's already busy with hockey or concerts or what have you, but it seems hard to believe it's that long from each other.
Warriors, for what it's worth, this season, 8-1 straight up, 6-3 against the spread on 3-plus days of rest. And the Memphis Grizzlies 1-3 straight up, 1-2-1 against the spread on 3-plus days of rest. So it's via StatFox right now. All right, let's go from here to all right, I think my guilty pleasure in this round of the postseason is Philadelphia and Miami. I'm really, for some reason, I'm really interested and I want to put myself through this again today. But I get your thoughts on what we've seen so far. So my thought process coming into the series, especially the first two games, was I wanted to bet on Philly. I do think that when you look at the way Miami plays defensively, giving up those three-point attempts, last in both frequency and open shots allowed from beyond the arc, the fact that Doc Rivers can, if he wants to, play small with Niang at the five and spread him out in a la like the Houston Rockets, right? That last full year with James Harden where it was like Russell Westbrook and Robert Covington and they were just chucking threes the entire time. You can do that against Miami, I think, and have some success. Problem is, Doc Rivers, for some reason, really likes DeAndre Jordan, and we'll start him, and they're abhorrent in those minutes. Where are you at with this series? Do you think I'm on the right path with thinking that Philly is the tempting side, or are you like, you're a clown, this is a one-sided matchup?
I'm on Philly, 8.5, no big, so yeah. I'm with you there. I wasn't on him first game, thank goodness. But listen, if you look at the quality of shots, they were getting good looks. The three-point percentage was horrific, like, for example, George Niang being 0-for-7. So they're going to have some positive regression back to the
Tom,
media.
Real quick, they went 0-10 on three-point attempts off of passes from James Harden in that game. Like, that's in we can criticize Harden all we want. He's still a good passer, and generally those are going to be high-quality looks.
He's one of the better facilitators in the league. Now, scoring, it's weird. Right. I didn't think we'd get to this point. Like, I don't trust him to score that much anymore. It's strange, but he's an excellent facilitator. To your point, they're going to be positive aggression to the mean. There's no question about it. The Embiid loss, I mean, it's enormous. You can't understate it. But at the same time, Kyle Lowry, the native son of Philly, wants to play in this series the worst way. Not being able to play is a bad sign for Miami. And so that makes up some of the difference. The natural human intuition up 1-0 as opposed to down 1-0, a little bit more desperation for Philly. But more importantly, the fact that they got good enough looks to make it believe that 8.5 is good value. I don't think they're going to win the game. And you can still find some 8.5 standard big buck 10. You can still find some 8.5s out there. I'm with you. I think, look, Miami's the better team right now with no Embiid. We understand that. But we're playing a number here. You've got to take 8.5. You can't lay 8.5 with Miami tonight, I don't think.
Yeah, there's two things. One, to the Miami point, let's see. I had this down in front of me. Offensive rating in the half court for Miami in that game was absolutely atrocious. I think it was like 80. Actually, I think it was, 87.2. And that's kind of been their bugaboo, right? Especially with Lowry not out there. Their half court offense really bogged down. And to your point about Philly and the shot quality, effective field goal percentage in that game for Philadelphia, 44.4%. But if you look at the location expected field goal percentage, which, you know, gives you essentially shot quality like you're talking about and league average, they should have had about a 55% according to Cleaning the Glass. So shots are there, man. The shots are there. Also, too, it leads me to kind of, I'm not a big totals bettor, but that kind of led me to looking at this game over the total as well. Given the fact that both teams actually shot below their quality at this point, and you're going to get more three-point attempts from Philly. I thought this was a pretty low total at 206.5, and it got up to 207 right now.
Yeah, I would agree with that. You'd have to go over because, you know, here I am talking about positive regression to the mean for Philly. You hit on a pretty decent point. And there were a lot of shots Miami got that were open looks that didn't fall either. So that would play into the over the total. You know, the pace is not going to be up and down the floor. It's not going to be Golden State, Memphis. But you're right. Just because there were so many missed shots, it was ugly offense for much of that game. I thought the offensive rebounding Miami was big time, too. Give them credit there. No surprise. No Embiid. They can't rebound. But to your point, if you're going to play the total, you got to go over. I think tonight, if you're playing this game, it's Philly or nothing, over or nothing.
Yep, and the last feather in the cap for Philadelphia would be, while both shot below their expected field goal percentage in that game, it was about 11% gap between the expected and the actual for Philadelphia, as opposed to about like a 6 or 7 gap for Miami. Yeah. So,
and that's the sort of stuff that's predictive. I love that stuff. Yeah, the locative effective field goal percentage on Cleaning the Glass. Now that is under the paywall, but still, it's like $5 a month. And then there's also a site I didn't even know about. I guess I'll throw them some love. Why not? Shotquality.com. I don't know if you're even aware of them. I just found out about it, which is similar. It doesn't match up perfectly with the located field goal percentage, but it's in the same ballpark, which I found interesting of late. So give that a look. I think they had it like Philadelphia should have made 9 more threes than they did. So 27 point difference.
Yeah, I think they're this is the same group that does a lot with college. They got some good stuff with college and.
Yeah, right. I wasn't aware of them. I had no idea, and somebody brought it to my attention recently. I just started looking at them, so I haven't used their data really yet because I got to trust them first. But I just found that it made me think of the stat I just saw before I came on. They should have had 9 more threes than they did, so it matches up pretty well with the clean the glass numbers.
That's pretty good. Yeah, I thought they just did college stuff, so I'm gonna bookmark this right now. All right, cool. All right. From there, we talked about a couple of these. Let's go to one of the series that I really liked game one, and I'm really excited for the series, even if it's only gonna be 5 or 6, which I don't think is gonna be the case. Dallas and Phoenix. So one of the things that I had spoken about in this series, what I found pretty interesting was from the Phoenix perspective. Taking on Dallas defensively. Dallas defensively, as we know, has been one of the best defensive teams, you know, this year and especially since the start of 2022. But what's interesting about what they do, Tom, is, as you well know, it's like a lot of these other analytically sound teams. It's cut off the rim, cut off the three-point line. We will allow you to take mid-range jumpers. Problem is, you have two really good mid-range scorers for Phoenix, yeah. And that was the case. They were 11 of 20 on long mid-range shots in that game against Dallas. They shot about 48% on all their mid-range attempts. It was incredible offensive performance for Phoenix. And that really, like, I was on Dallas in that game, and you know, Dinwiddie hits a shot, whatever, I cover the number. But the way that Phoenix exploited what you kind of saw coming left the bad taste in my mouth for Dallas.
I'm with you. Look, I'd be shocked if Phoenix doesn't win this series. I'm not aboard the value on Dallas stuff. And against the number, I think it's pretty good. I'm looking at the player-based number I modeled here as it at 6. So that's right on the number. I doubt I'll play the game. I would love to have a side. Look, Phoenix is really good. You mentioned the idea they have two tremendous mid-range. Don't forget about Mikal Bridges. Here's a guy who's excellent 3-and-D. Think how bad that trade was for the 76ers a couple of years ago. You know, the guy they got from Texas Tech, Devontae Smith, not even in the league. Now, they did get a first-round pick out of it, so let's throw that in there. But, I mean, if Mikal Bridges were on Philly, think about how good they might look. Here's a kid who's just very undervalued. DeAndre Ayton's playing well right now, too. I still don't know if I give him a max. That'll be interesting to keep an eye on that. But DeAndre Ayton's playing well. They got a great staff. Phoenix and Golden State's going to happen. Now, Dallas is going to be a problem. I love Luka. You hit on a number of points, though. Stylistically, I don't see them winning this. Trying to see if there's any other nuggets I could throw in there. Now, I mean, I'm looking for value one side or the other. Total, yeah. Not really. This is probably a no play for me. Just sit back and watch, be frank with you.
Yeah, I think that's how I'm going to handle it going forward. So I've got Dallas at 14-1 to win the West, but I've also got Phoenix at 7-1 to win the NBA Finals. So It's one of those series where either result would be fine with me. So I think, especially since I took one on the chin with the first game, I might just sit back and watch the rest of it play out because, really, when you have those weaknesses out there and then the team comes in is like, yeah, we're going to exploit every single one of those. And it actually happens, a little bit of a bothersome thing there. Also, too, the other side of it is Doncic is incredible. 45 points is awesome, but you need more out of Brunson and Dinwiddie and others. And they actually, I think they generated like 28 wide open threes and they shot the ball pretty well. But other than that, I find it hard, a defense like that that's going to switch everything. And they got two really good wing defenders. It's just, it was not a good performance from Dallas, despite only losing by 7.
Nah, it wasn't. And by the way, real quick, because we were complaining about the kids, I got to pick up my girl in 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Boston, Milwaukee. Giannis is great, the best player in the world, JVT. But can we give Jason Tatum some love? Now, I think Boston's going to cover that 3. Okay, I love Boston in the 3. To your point, home court, quarter of the year numbers, 1, mine, 3. But meet in the middle, let's say 2. Either way, even if you want to use 1-3, there's a lot of value on Boston. Can we give Jason Tatum some love? Here I was a year ago saying, I love Tatum, will never be an MVP candidate. Yes, he is. I said going into that Brooklyn series, he had already entered that space with Kevin Durant. We may have seen a passing of the torch in terms of wings in the East, Durant to Tatum. Dude is absolutely phenomenal. Marcus Smart's injury concerns me a little bit. He's kind of a wanky matchup in this series. Yeah. Anyway, I know Milwaukee took game one, and that swung the pendulum in a lot of fans' minds. Not me. I'd still be shocked if Boston doesn't win this series. That's one I love taking a 3 there. I'm surprised it's 3. It usually goes with my number, so I think it's going to be closer to 2, maybe even 1 by game time, but who knows? Seems like the public is all of a sudden on Milwaukee after that pounding they gave Boston in game one.
Yeah, really quickly, too. And to your point about the series, Kevin Pelton had this stat the other day. I don't know if you saw it. Teams in the postseason, the last 10 years, the teams that win game one on the road by double digits are actually 2-10 in the series over the last 10 years. And the most recent example is actually Minnesota. Minnesota won game one against Memphis. Yeah. They won it by 13, and then they ended up losing the series. So it's pretty interesting stat.
Yeah, it is. It's listen, it's another reminder. You don't want to overreact. Sure, every game is huge in a best of seven. But just because one team might beat up the other in game one doesn't mean you overreact and keep riding them the rest of the way. I don't think you go to the zigzag either. I know a lot of guys do that. I'd prefer that, though, than just taking the results of game one and betting accordingly the rest of the way. It makes no sense, but you'd be shocked how many people do that.
Yeah, I was on Milwaukee the first two games, but that was more the home court thing we were talking about, and the number being maybe a little high as opposed to just thinking that Milwaukee's going to ride this out. I hope you're right, though. I got a really good futures ticket on Boston. I got them at 66-1 to win the finals. I am a very big Boston fan, and I think I'll get your thoughts on this before we get you out of here because I know you got to go. I said this the other day. I think they rip apart Miami if it's an Eastern Conference Finals. I think they match up extremely well with the Heat, the Boston Celtics.
I do too. Yeah. I would say it's five games before seven.
Yes. I'm with you.
That defense is so good, it's ridiculous. Like, Miami aspires to be Boston. They think they're Boston defensively, right? Boston is actually the team, Robert Williams defensively. Think about it. The defensive player of the year didn't play last night. The defense was better.
Yep.
Tells you all I need to know.
All right, man. I appreciate it. I know you're busy, so thank you very much. And we'll talk again soon, all right?
JBT anytime.
This is the Hardwood Handicappers Podcast.
All right, a big thanks to Tom Byrne for joining us here today on the episode. I wanted to add a little bit before we get out of here, cut a little short on the conversation around the Boston Celtics and the Milwaukee Bucks. Don't want to, by any stretch, dismiss the chances of the Milwaukee Bucks in this series against the Boston Celtics, especially because Milwaukee does have home court here after that loss the other day. My days all melt together. Yesterday, today is Wednesday. And really, when you look at what happened yesterday, too, there are some positive signs, again, coming out of a loss like that against the Boston Celtics. I mean, when you make 17 more three-point attempts than your opponent, you're in a pretty good position, and that's exactly what the Boston Celtics did against Milwaukee. And still, in the fourth quarter, multiple times, the Bucks able to cut it to a 12-point deficit and looked like potentially they were going to maybe get back in. It give you a little bit of hope if you had some numbers on it like I did. Ultimately, not the case, though. And Milwaukee still, too, with another big positive, was that for a second consecutive game, had a really pretty good performance within 4 feet of the basket, took 43% of their attempts there, went 22 of 28, drew five shooting fouls. So that's a 78.6% shooting percentage within 4 feet of the basket against Boston. So there's, again, positives to build on here as we kind of move forward with Milwaukee. Adjusted series price there, too. We're going to run through all these. Celtics now, $1.20 favorite to win the series, -125, -130, depending on where you look. But what I think is interesting as we move forward, and as Tom said, he was looking at Boston in that game catching three against Milwaukee. We're starting to get off of that three, and 2.5s are starting to appear. I am fascinated by how the market has been handling this home court thing. And the sample size is growing, so we're starting to get this a little bit tighter. But I wanted to kind of walk through the process of what I was talking about with the home court stuff because, you know, it is factored into this start of the postseason. So through the early portion of this season, 26-23 against the spread, that would be the road teams in the postseason up to this point. The basis of all of this now is just looking at how you value home court. Now, by my numbers, as I talked about with Tom there, by my numbers, home court has been worth about 1 point in the postseason. In the regular season, it was just over 1.5 points at about 1.52, 1.53 points, depending on how you crunch your numbers. And how I do it, as I explained with Tom, is you find the median of the results that have occurred up to this point. From there, you get a median result, and that is your home court number. So it's been only worth one through a very short sample size. Because again, if we're talking about, I think right now we're at 49 postseason games, that's not really a sample size that's worth writing home about. But what makes it interesting is that the results have been geared toward the fact that maybe the market is overvaluing home court. So mentioned road teams 26-23 against the spread. So a winning record ATS. Now, when you're talking about percentage wise and what that means, you're just breaking even with that, right? Right, you're at 53.1% when you're talking about betting these road teams. So this has kind of come back in terms of being even. And home teams at this point right now, after the results of yesterday, have failed to cover games by about 1.15 points per game. So it still gets you to the point where maybe the market is overvaluing home court. but maybe not as much as I originally believed it to be, and as it originally was at the beginning of the postseason, where home teams seem to not be covering at a very high clip. Again, they were 26 and 21 the other day against the spread, and that was before, of course, a really good stretch 2 days for the home team. So this is continuing to grow and evolve. I just think it's something worth noting here. The market is definitely using three as home court advantage. As Tom noted, if you look at the net rating of home teams in the postseason, it's just about three if you factor in possessions, or excuse me, pace as well. So as this plays out, as the sample size grows, is going to be pretty intriguing. But two consecutive days where home teams had a really good day, and it brings us back to this game between Boston and Milwaukee. So if the market is accurate in rating home court to be worth 3 points, and Boston is on the road catching three, that would mean that the Milwaukee Bucks and the Boston Celtics are the same team from a power rating perspective on a neutral. Do not believe that to be the case. I do rate Boston as the better team. I do rate them, obviously, as the better team because Chris Middleton's not going to play on top of that, but I think full strength, I rate them as a better team as well, just barely, but still the better team. So thus leading to the thought process that is, there is some value there on Boston catching 3 points on the road against Milwaukee. And I would agree with that sentiment that when you get to Saturday here from a number standpoint, we've kind of gotten to the point where if we're getting tighter, if we're getting closer to the home court being worth three, and if this is really what we're going to do here, and that three is telling you that, hey, Milwaukee and Boston are the same team, I hardly think that's accurate. So we will see how this plays out over the larger sample size, but I tend to start, as I looked at the last couple of days, and as home teams start to make up this gap from a spread standpoint, start to win a few more games, history tells us that in the postseason, home court is worth more than in the regular season, and the last 2 days have shown us that the home teams are starting to deliver just a little bit more. Also want to say, too, I really hope that some of you guys and gals who have been listening to the podcast have been following along, because if you have been, we're in a really good position from a future standpoint right now. The Boston Celtics at 66-1 to win the NBA Finals in pocket. The Miami Heat at 14-1 to win the NBA Finals in pocket. That very much looks like it could be our Eastern Conference Finals, which that would be a brilliant thing to happen if that's the case. And as I mentioned with Tom, I very much favor the Boston Celtics in that series. And then on the flip side, in the Western Conference, nothing on Golden State or Memphis, but we are guaranteed to have either a 14-1 ticket to win the Western Conference on the Dallas Mavericks in the Western Conference Finals, or that 7-1 ticket on the Phoenix Suns to win the NBA Finals in the Western Conference Finals. So obviously two positions there, which are very manageable as well. So in a very good position from a future standpoint to cash in on something here, get a little money out of some of those numbers. But wanted to kind of clean up that home court conversation. Wanted to touch a little bit on Milwaukee and Boston. It's a really good series, and I'm really intrigued by how that is going to play out, because at the end of the day, Milwaukee does have the best player on the floor in Giannis Antetokounmpo. But as Tom said, I mean, the gap is shrinking between him and Jason Tatum. I still think he is, Giannis, the better team, or the better guy, clearly. But as we move forward in his career, Jason Tatum is going to be a player worth respecting in a very, very big way. I think I said worth because I was going to say very, so those things bled together. All right, with that, a midweek episode, I am efforting one Daniel Alvari to potentially come on Friday. We can talk a little LA hoops, but also WNBA postseason. And also started the work on the, I said WNBA postseason, I meant regular season preview. And also started work on the NBA draft, which we'll start to incorporate in the episodes coming up in a couple of days, because that work is definitely worth it. And I don't know if Vegas books are going to be hanging much, but I definitely think it's worth the conversation as we start to look at the NBA draft, where some of these players are going, and keeping track of workouts and whatnot as they start to ratchet up here over the next few weeks. With that, we're all done. Appreciate it as always, and we will check in later.